Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, it's Shelly Nunchuk from the Shelly Nunchuk Show with my two little furball co-hosts, Jackie Chan Kitty and Rocky Balboa. And what you guys don't see is, like, when I'm here, radio, you don't see what goes behind the scenes about the two crazy cats that I have. One is either, like, yelling out the window, getting people that walk by their attention to have try to come to the window. And the other one, Rocky the kitten, he's a couple months now, but he swings from the curtains, and I've actually got laser pointer now with a little red dot, and Jackie Chan Kitty, the old cat, she doesn't really chase it that much, the little one. And he actually even knows that I actually, have it. But he's like, he yells at me, and he wants me to, like, keep doing it. But anyway, tonight I'm dedicating my show to none other than a person I look up to, Jackie Chan. And I actually have my book that's actually falling apart. And if anybody wants to call in here. Oh, gosh, I'm trying to get this all together here. Let's see. I got stuff coming out of the book. Okay. Just taking this stuff out. Yeah, I actually have a newsletter, too. I think April was the last time. It's really kind of cool here. My book is actually falling apart. I actually have two books. And this I wanted to read a little bit about Jeffy. I mean, he's done so much in this world, you know, so many charities, so many films, and gives so much of himself. He's been in the Guinness Book of World Records for, like, the most broken things in a body in films. And right now I'm opening up. Like I said, this book is falling apart. It's called I Am Jackie Chan, and it's about Jackie's life. If anybody wants to call in, and you like Jackie, if you like his films or whatever he does, or if you actually work with him, you know, you can call in, and it's 347-989-1473, 347-989-1473. And I'm posting this again on my page. So, yeah, I'm posting this one more time here. Just get this up on here. Okay. And to read from a part, and I am Jackie Chan, it says, Young Master. And this is Jackie's words in the book. I was born on April 7, 1954, the only son of Charles and Lily Chan. They named me Chen Kong Sing, which means born in Hong Kong Chan. I guess my parents weren't very original when it came to names, or maybe they just wanted to celebrate their relief at making it to Hong Kong as survivors of a breathless escape from the turmoil of the mainland. Hong Kong was a promised land, a place that offered safety and prosperity, a place where new lives could begin. But the Chinese calendar, 1954, was the year of the horse. According to superstition, the horse is a sign of energy, ambition, and success. It's a good year to be born if you're a boy, not such a good one if you're a girl. Because tradition says that a female horse will have trouble finding a proper husband, and many parents were happy that I came into the world under such a fortunate sign. Of course, my arrival in the year of the horse was hardly a coincidence. Actually, it took an awful lot of stubbornness on my part to pull it off. Most babies are born 9 months after being conceived. I, on the other hand, stuck around an extra 3 months until my mother was forced to go to a surgeon to bring me into the world, kicking and screaming by cesarean section. Maybe it was my rebellious streak that made me refuse to join my parents on time, or maybe it was premonition of what my future would hold. After all, while comfortably inside my mother, I had privacy, sleep, and all the food I could ever ask for without having to fight or to work or to suffer. In fact, I can only say that those extra 3 months were the easiest time of my life. Nothing like that waited for me in the world outside. Hong Kong in the 50s was a hard and restless place, and my family's position there was at the very bottom of the social ladder. Among the thousands of destitute migrants who fled to the British colony after the mainland's communist revolution, still, as poor as we were, we felt lucky to have survived China's Civil War, and especially grateful that my parents had good jobs in the strange new society of the island. Many of our fellow refugees arrived in Hong Kong with nothing but the clothes on their back, the memories of what they left behind. They lived in shacks in the islands, crowded ghettos, making paper flowers and cheap trinkets to survive or turn into less socially accepted and more dangerous pursuits. It was a bad time to be poor, but then again, when is it ever a good time to be poor? As the crowd of new immigrants grew, the colony's swelling population divided into two groups, the determined and the desperate. On the one hand, there were those who embraced the city's unspoken philosophy. Work hard and you'll survive. Do well, maybe even get rich. But meanwhile, in the lower parts of the city, the lives of many of our fellow newcomers were filled with hunger, crime, and fear. We belonged to the first group, the lucky ones. Soon after coming to the island, my father and mother had found employment with the French ambassador to Hong Kong, a kind gentleman with a warm and caring family. Dad became the ambassador's cook and handyman. My mother was a housekeeper. And so, when I was born, I found myself not only in the tough streets of Lower Hong Kong, but in a mansion on the exclusive slopes of Victoria Peak, the home of the wealthy, the famous, and the powerful, and me. I don't recall the house itself too well. It was big, I remember, and very grand. In the front rooms, well-dressed Westerners and sometimes Chinese would chat and take tea or listen to music. Upstairs, the ambassador's family had their quarters, huge rooms with high ceilings and windows that opened out onto the lights of the city below. But I didn't see these parts of the house very often. This was a different world from the ones in which my family lived. Our place was the rear of the mansion, divided from the air and light of the front by a small door. If you open that door and pass through, you'd find yourself in a long, narrow hall that ran along the length of the house. the highway of our world. It was usually dark in that quarter, except when meals were being served, so it might be easy to find your way around by smell and sound than by sight. Here's a quick tour of our world. To your right, the first door off the corridor, the noise of chopping and sizzling and occasional curse, the aroma of roasting meat and vegetables simmering in fragrant peanut oil. That would be the kitchen, where Father spent his morning and afternoons preparing food for the ambassador's family. Farther down the corridor, the soft slush of trickling water and the sweet melody of a hummed folk song, the laundry room, where my mother washed mountains of fluffy linens and the family's fine, beautiful clothing. Then the smell of incense and warm and dry grass matting, the gentle noise of an infant's breathing. This would be our family's bedroom where my mother and father and I all slept together. Our room was tiny, and it was not what you were probably considered comfortable. There were no windows, and the walls and floors were clean but bare. The furniture all been made by my father's hands, and there wasn't much of it, a bunk bed, some benches, and a storage trunk. My parents slept together in top bunk of the bed, and I slept in the bottom one. From the top bunk, you could reach up and touch the ceiling. Four long steps would take you from wall to wall. This was all the home I knew for the first 6 years of my life, and I was happy there, despite the cramped quarters and the simple furnishing. Actually, I didn't know at the time just how good I had it. The next place I'd call home would make out small room like a palace. But I haven't finished the tour. Follow the corridor to its end, and you'd hear the buzz of flies, and your nose would wrinkle at the pungent odors of mold and aging food. This at the end of the hall would be the rubbish room where the household garbage was stored during the day to be disposed of at night. By the time I was a small child, I get to know this room very well. More on why later. I mentioned that I started giving trouble to my parents even before I was born. Of all the crazy stunts I've done, in my opinion, nothing compares to my mom's achievement, surviving nearly an entire year of pregnancy, then giving birth to a healthy baby who weighed 12 pounds at delivery. Both my parents were shocked when I finally arrived. My father said he'd never seen such a big baby in his life. He and mom nicknamed me Pau Pau, which is Chinese for cannonball. And I'm sure my mother was glad that she didn't have to give birth to me naturally. There was a price to pay for my safe and sound arrival, of course. The bill for my mother's surgery came to Hong Kong, $500, about U.S. $26. And my parents even didn't come close to covering the cost. But the lady doctor who performed the surgery must have been impressed by me, too, because afterwards she approached my nervous father with a deal. She had no kids of her own. She explained to him, and she knew he and my mother had no money. If my father would allow her to adopt me, she'd be willing to pay for the cost of the surgery and my mother's hospital stay, and even give my parents an additional adoption fee of $1,500. I'm not angry about the fact that my father fought long and hard about the offer. 2,000 Hong Kong dollars was a lot of money back then, and poor children were regularly given to wealthier friends and relatives growing up in those days. Maybe it would have been for the best because the lady doctor would have brought me up in style. But I was my parents' only son. I was a symbol of their new start in Hong Kong. I was born under a lucky sign, and I was big and healthy. My father went home and talked about the doctor's offer with some of his friends, who all said the same thing. There was something special about me, the 12-month, 12-pound baby, and if I grew up to be a great man, my father would always regret giving me up. Dad's friends lent him the money to pay off the hospital debt, and after thanking the doctor for her skillful surgery and generous offer, he took my mother and me home on the big house on the peak. Okay, and since we have family stories. That's the story of how I was born, or at least that's the one Dad told me all my life. But inside, story hides another story. And over the years, I found out a little more about our secret history, about why my parents left behind in China when they came to Hong Kong, and the real reason I was too special to give away. If you were to look at the pictures of my father as a young man, your first impression would be that this is a man of great strength and enormous pride. And, of course, you'd be right. Dad was born in China's Shandong province, the land of the famous North Clan and the birthplace of many legendary wars and martial artists. His family was a respected one, and even as a small child, he was expected to go on to great things. Now, back then, Shanghai was the style capital of Asia. All of the finest things and people in China could be found in this one city where art, fashion, philosophy, and society reached their height of sophistication. The chance brought their promising son there at the age of 3, grooming him to become one of the society's leaders. When he came into adulthood, he was married to the daughter of another respectable family. I don't know if he was happy then, but I have to assume he was. My father and his wife lived together with the approval of their clans. They shared a roof and a household, and they had children. I signed this out just a few years ago. I knew my father always sent money back to relatives in China. Sometimes he'd say it was for his brother, other times his sister. I never met any other member of his family, so I didn't have any reason to ask him any further questions. And really, I don't have that much curiosity in my personality. And what's this say here? But then something happened that made me curious in spite of myself. The meal had just arrived and I was going through it. Nothing interesting. Bills, invitation to events, and an unsigned letter from the mainland addressed to my dad. He wasn't at home, and suddenly I realized that I wanted to know more about this mystery. All those unasked, unanswered questions about my family, so I opened the envelope. Dearest Father. Dearest Father! I knew I sent the letter. I looked at the envelope again. Dearest Father, dearest Father, I knew I hadn't sent the letter. I looked at the envelope again. It was sent to my house in my dad's name, and inside the envelope, something else. A photograph of three old men. We miss you, continued the letter. My brothers, my dad's sons, I've never seen them before in my life. When my father came home, I waved the letter in his face. What's this? Who? I shouted, who are these guys? His face went stiff like stone. You don't need to know, Jackie, said quietly. You don't need to know. And he took the letter and photograph away. We never talked about it again. That's how I found out about my half-brothers. The rest of the story isn't very clear. I know that it involved the Japanese. When the armies invaded China, they turned the nation upside down. Chinese were fighting Chinese, and Shanghai, the city they call the Jewel of the East, became a place of fear. My father's family had to abandon everything it owned, and even more, my father was forced to leave behind his sons and his wife. I don't think she survived the war. At the time, my mother was also in Shanghai. She was from a very poor background. She had nothing of the advantage of my father's upbringing. Like my father, she was married. And like my father, in the turmoil of war, she had to leave her husband and family behind. She escaped the terror by hiding from Japanese troops scavenging food and making a dangerous journey on foot to the coast. It was in Shandong, my ancestral home, that she met my dad. Despite the difference in their backgrounds, the war had turned them into equals. Two refugees still mourning the loss of their loved ones. Somehow, Dad managed to bring her with him on the boat and smuggled him out of the mainland. They got married soon after, safely reaching Hong Kong. And not long after that, I was on my way. All through my childhood, they always told me that I was an only child, their special son. This is part of the reason why I was so shocked to find out about my brothers. But the shock was just the beginning. My mother is very old now, and even though my wife has always helped to take care of her some years ago, it became clear that she needed someone to be with her all the time, to live with her in my parents' home in Australia. One day when I went to visit them, the person who answered the door was a strange older woman. She didn't introduce herself as she brought me to see my mother, but somehow she seemed familiar. Hi, Mom. Who's this new housekeeper? I asked. My mother looked at me in silence for a few minutes. She isn't a housekeeper, she said. Son, meet your sister. Even today, I don't know everything. I don't think I want to know. My mother told my manager, Willie, the whole story once, and he came running over to tell me that it would make a fantastic movie. I told him that even if it would, I don't want to make it. I don't want to find out that I have more brothers and sisters, that my father isn't my real father, or that my mother isn't my real mother. A secret history belongs where it is now, in the past. Still, I guess you can see my parents were reluctant to give me up. There might have been other children lost in the branches of the family tree, but who knew at the time if they'd survive the war? And besides, I was the only child they shared, the only son of Charles and Li Li Chin. Sometimes I wonder if it would have been like to have known my half-brothers and sisters growing up. But being an only child had its advantages, too, most of which had to do with my mother. Without any competition with siblings, I had all of my mom's attention, which, of course, is exactly what I demanded. As a toddler, I remember watching my mother do the chores that filled her waking hours. A large part of her day was spent in the laundry room, washing, ironing, and folding, and I would crawl around her feet, pulling down sheets, putting soap chips in my mouth, and nearly tripping her as she carried hot water from the running up to the scrub basin. Eventually, Mom did what she always did when she needed a little bit of peace. She filled a big tub with warm water and put me inside, letting me splash and play. I wasn't any easier to take care of when evening arrived, either restless in my lower bunk. I would scream and cry throughout the night. The noise would not only keep up my hard-working parents, it would sometimes filter upstairs to the ambassador's bedroom, waking his patient but lightly sleeping wife. I totally managed my parents' embarrassment when the wife of the employee came down in her nightgown and robes to the servants' clothes, asked them very politely to quiet their obnoxious child. When this happened, my mother would pick me up and bring me outside to the mansion's back garden, cradling me in her arms and gently shooing the mosquitoes away with a straw fan. While she held me, she would hum a soft melody without words until finally I went to sleep. Every child thinks his mother is the best in the world, but my mom really is the greatest. She had no education, no opportunities in life. She's a very traditional Chinese woman who devoted her entire life to her husband and her son. I never remember her going out, never saw her in makeup or fancy clothing. I don't even remember her spending money on herself. Everything was for the family. Even now, when I can afford to buy her anything, the things she chooses to wear are things she bought 40 years ago. I remember one day when I was in Australia visiting her, all of a sudden she turned to me and said, "Son, can you give me $120? It was a strange request. Why such a weird amount? If you give me $120, I'll turn it into $1,000. That made me think, how? I asked. My mother's a wonderful woman, but she's no magician or financial wizard. She smiled. I'll show you. I followed her as she left the living room and walked down the corridor to her bedroom. Reach up and get the bag, Jackie, she said. I stood on my toes and grunted as I pulled down the suitcase. It was almost brand new. One of the ones I bought her, she never used them when she traveled, preferring the old battered bag she had since my parents lived in Hong Kong. Inside the suitcase were clothes she no longer wore, but couldn't bear to throw away. Lifting out and setting aside some old sweaters, she pulled out a huge bundle of wrinkled and faded bills. I looked at it in shock. Not a single one of the bills were in a demonstration greater than $20. There were hundreds of ones and fives and tens, and it all added up to $880. This was the money she saved from over 20 years of keeping house. Tips from ambassadors and presidents and members of parliaments, all the people she cleaned up for and straightened up after. Mom, give me the money and I'll give you $10,000 in Australian cash. So we traded. You know what? We had dinner with friends that night, and we spent our whole sack, 20 years of my mother's life, and boom, we ate it in one meal. I said before, there are advantages to being an only child. Well, there are also disadvantages, most of which have to do with my father. How much easier would my child have been if only it had siblings to share the burden of my father's expectation? You see, Dad, like his Shangdong ancestors, was a warrior at heart, a man of great courage and determination. He was proud that he had managed to overcome everything fate had thrown his way. All the tragedy and suffering years of back-breaking labor. The Japanese army conquered China, he would often boast, but they could never conquer the Chinese. That is why our civilization has survived for thousands of years. To a Chinese man, suffering is like rights. It only makes us stronger. From this fall to scary kind of logic pain, giving you discipline. Discipline is at the root of manhood. And so, to be a real man, one must suffer as much as possible. Because bringing me into the world wasn't so expensive, Dad was especially adamant about raising me up as properly disciplined man. If he even had knocked me sideways to do it. Each morning he'd rise dawn with just a hair thin line of light on the horizon, leaving my mother still dozing, leaping to the ground from his bunk as softly as possible. He'd shake me roughly awake. Ah, Paul, it's morning. Up, up, up. If I complained too much or rode away, he'd just grab me by the waist and pull me out of bed in a tangle of sheets and arms. When I was lucky, I'd get my feet under me before the rest of me hit the floor. When I wasn't, well, at least I learned how to take a fall, a good lesson for the future. Once we were both more or less awake, we went to the laundry room and splashed water on our faces and chests. The water was always freezing cold, and in the chill there early morning raised goosebumps on my skin. But the chill wouldn't last long. Like any survivor, my father was a jack of all trades, an accomplished amateur carpenter and handyman. Out of stray pieces of wood and recycled rubbish, rice sacks, rope, and large cans that still smell faintly of cooking oil, he made a makeshift gym, and we would greet sunrise with a workout that left me breathless and soaked with perspiration. We would run, lift bags filled with sand, do military-style push-ups, and spend hours practicing martial arts. Though I was just 4 or 5 years old, already my father teaching me the basics of northern-style kung fu. It may seem strange that such a young child would be learning how to fight. You have to remember, though, that to us, Chinese, kung fu isn't just a means of self-defense. In some ways, the history of kung fu is the history of China. Legend says that kung fu was invented by, I know that this, but I'm trying to, pronounce it correctly. Rodhidharma. Rodhidharma. Anybody wants to correct me on that, please feel free to do so. The monk who traveled from India to China spread Buddha's teaching. When he arrived at the great temple of Shaolin, Rodhidharma, remember, if anybody wants to correct me, feel free, was turned away by the skeptical Shaolin brothers. He then took up residence in a small cave near the temple and meditated there for nearly a decade. Over the years, the Shaolin monk watched in awe, stared intently without sleeping, even blinking at the walls of his cave. After 9 years, the power of the stair bore a hole through the wall into the daylight. The display of discipline led the monks to embrace Rodhidharma as a great teacher. How can we learn how to be like you? And so he taught them how to be great wisdom of Buddhism and the power of meditation, but found that no matter how the monks try, they were not strong enough to resist sleep and other temptation. As a result, he wrote a manual called the Classic of Muscle Change, blueprinting a series of exercises that toughen the body and mind. Over time, the Shaolin monks adapted these exercises in Chinese Kung Fu. Kung Fu translates loosely into English as skill, but by the time of the Tang Dynasty, which they call China's heroic age, Kung Fu has diverged into many different skills. The southern styles, which emphasize strong defensive postures and powerful fight techniques, and the northern, which are flowing, acrobatic, and focuses on dynamic spinning kicks. When the Tang Emperor Wang Shiqiong faced a revolt in the countryside, it was warrior monks from the Shaolin Temple who defeated the rebels. Spreading the legend of their boxing abilities and turning Kung Fu into something every gentleman of quality should know. Although skills with the sword, the spear, and the staff were always an important part of the Chinese martial arts, it was not armed techniques that was most admired. The master of Chinese boxing was deadly even when alone and armed only with his iron fist and lightning legs. When the Manchu invaders conquered China in the 17th century, study of martial arts was outlawed. But the spirit of Kung Fu could not die. Rebels loyal to the true emperor gathered in the underground societies called triads, developing the art of Kung Fu in secret. By the turn of the century, the triads had turned into an extensive network of revolutionaries committed to driving out the Manchus and their Western allies and restoring Chinese rule. The arrival of the year 1900 triggered the Boxer Rebellion, an uprising by triads convinced that their mysterious skills would protect them from bullets of hatred foreigners. Unfortunately, they were wrong. Thousands of triad members were killed, and the rest were driven into hiding in Hong Kong and Taiwan, and even in the West. In China, Kung Fu was suppressed for generations. Its masters dead or in exile, while the disgraced and broken triads degenerated into brutal crime gangs. But the crackdown on Kung Fu in China only led to its spread throughout the world. Now, the techniques of Kung Fu are practiced everywhere by those who realize that it builds the character traits that lead into greatness, strength, patience, courage, and subtlety. My father believed this more than anyone. To him, learning Kung Fu was the same as learning how to be a man. And frankly, I was a big disappointment. Lazy and impatient by nature, and first I practiced under his watchful eye only out of fear. But if I didn't, he'd demonstrate his techniques on me, his useless son. Worse yet, when I finally realized that his training was making me strong, tough, and a fearsome opponent to any kid stupid enough to get in my way, I brought my dad's worst nightmare to life. I went from being a brat to being a brawler. I found quickly that fighting was fun when you won, anyway, and it soon became one of my favorite hobbies next to eating. Nothing really compared to eating. Even now, I guess I'd have to say that nothing comes close to the pleasure of good, hearty meal. But in my own defense, I never got into fights without good reason, or at least the reason that seemed good at the time. I mentioned that the ambassador's family was always very nice to us, but you couldn't say the same for some of our neighbors. We were poor Chinese living as servants in the home of rich and important Westerner. The other Westerner kids, but it was a shame that the ambassador's wife encouraged their children to play with me. These bullies made it their hobby to pick on me, which was okay, and on my friends, which was not. Don't mess with my friends, ever. That's a lesson I'm always willing to teach with my fist. My closest companion in the world at the time was the ambassador's youngest daughter, a beautiful little girl who called me her boyfriend. I accepted the role with pride, and anyone who dared to make her cry would soon find herself on the ground, me and all my chubby weight on top. Unfortunately, my dad didn't care about my chivalrous efforts to defend my young friend's honor. The first time he found me seated on the screaming body of one of the neighbor's boys, bruised but cowering victory. He grabbed me by the scuff of my neck and pulled me into the house. "Dad, I won," I shouted, causing my mother to peek her head out of the laundry room alarmed. "Dad, ow." I was more scared of my father when he was silent than when he was shouting. When he yelled at me, I knew he'd get a spanking at the very worst. Pain never bothered me much after all, and when he went away eventually, and at least after a spanking, I'd be free to do whatever I wanted. But when my dad was quiet, I had no idea what he would do next, except that I wouldn't enjoy it. My mother watched as my father pulled me down the corridor, past our room where spankings usually took place, and into the alcove where trash was stored. "What's wrong, Dad? I won," I said, my voice trembling. His eyes flashed, and I flinched away from him. "I did not teach you kung fu so you could beat up your friends," he said, ice dripping from his words. "I'm teaching you how to fight so that you will never have to fight at all." "Well, he wasn't my friend," I countered. My dad turned bright red. Without another word, he pushed me into the alcove, which was full and stinking with the day's garbage. I stumbled to my knees and heard the door behind my door being slammed and locked behind me. In the corridor, my mother said something to my father, who barked back in response. Both voices disappeared into the distance. I looked around at my surroundings. It was tiny and it was crowded. I could reach out with both of my arms, touch both walls, or at least I could have if walls would have been lined with bins and bags of trash. There were no roofs to the alcove, allowing the dimming light of the sun to trickle into the space. I suspected I would be there long after the moon took over, gingerly sitting down on the floor and resting my back against the locked door. I made myself as comfortable as possible and tried to take a nap. I didn't care what my dad said when I jumped on that bully. My little friend had looked at me like I was a hero. If a hero's place was out with the trash, well, I'd take it as an honor. Too bad I was going to miss dinner. A faint tapping roused me from my dozing. I realized that my stomach was rumbling with hunger. Even as a boy, my body always demanded food on a regular sizable basis. "Paw Paw," said my mom in a whisper behind the door. "Look up." The doorway to the cove had a narrow space above for ventilation. My mom is a small woman, but by reaching up with both arms and standing on her tiptoes, she could just place her fingertips into the crack. As I raised my head, a crisp white paper package fell from the ventilation space into my lap, pushed through by my loving mother's hands. Inside the wrapping was a sandwich made of warm, soft bread and roast meat. Without even thanking my mom, I began gobbling the food, only half listening to the padding sound of my mother's feet walking back down the corridor to our family's bedroom. As I said, my mom is the best mom in the whole wide world. The next morning, I was really awakened by the opening of the door against which I was leaning. I fell backwards to the corridor, blinking up at the expressionless face of my father. "How power this morning, time to get up," I said, and instructed me to help him move the heavy bins of trash out for collection. By the time that was done, dawn had arrived, and it was time to greet the sun with our morning workout. Okay, well, I'm going to take a little break and play some music now. There's actually a guest that I will be getting on my show. He actually was on the show, Korea Got Talent, with Sung Bung Choi, and he was also an orphan, lived on the streets of Korea, and grew up there at the age of 5, surviving selling energy drinks at nighttime to people for money and such. And then he went on Korea's Got Talent, and he's still waiting to be signed. He placed second in this competition. So I'm going to be getting more of the music. So for now, I'm actually going to play a song he sung, Nella Fantasia, and this is Sung Bung Choi, and I'll be right back.
Fantasia, io vedo un mondo giusto, lì tutti vivono in pace e in onestà. Io sogno l'anime che sono sempre more. la fantasia, io vedo un mondo chiaro.
a pace. My nerves unsettle, sweat drips my face. Hands take, can't escape this decision I make. Heart racing, my faith says this is my fate. I'm just bracing, I take in the face of adversity. Facing this certainty, the brakes ain't hurting me. Gain on, a bomb, my pain stronger. Fame smarter, street smarter, train harder. Can't stop me, drop me, I'm not losing. I'm too fast, lightning even when I'm not moving. All heart, leave these cowards on cold. I'm hot, not to mention all the power I hold. Keep moving, keep training, headstrong, be patient. Meet them head to head, I don't care if it's the least safest. Not stopping, have a promise to prove I'm a fighter. It's not an option to lose.
Alrighty, I'm back, and tonight's show is, of course, dedication to none other than Jackie Chan, a man who inspires me very, very much, and I'm actually reading from I Am Jackie Chan book, and I'm going to put it on pause right here because it does look like I have a caller in queue. Give me one moment, ladies and gentlemen. Hello, caller, you on the air?
Hi, it's Melissa calling from L.A. How are you, Shelley?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Doing great. So you're reading Jackie Chan's book, huh?
Yeah, I'm reading it live on the air. I started reading some of it, and I'm like, there's a lot.
Oh, my God. What's the most amazing thing that you read so far?
Well, I guess his mother was pregnant with him for a year, because it's in the beginning, and he's like, she was pregnant with him for 12 months. He didn't want to come out.
Oh, gosh, that's crazy. That's fun. So have you, have you gotten to the part where he was given up to the school?
It's getting there. It's actually, he's at the Ambassador, where he's like, he's learning about like a little bit of kung fu training with his dad. He's like 5 years old or like at that part. But it's like, I think after that it will... it'll get to that part. I read the book before, but I figured, you know, give the taste to people saying, you know, he has a little bit more interest in about Jackie because most people know him, you know, as a stunt guy and stuff, and to, like, read about his life, I think people would find it interesting. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, he started out in the opera and is quite an established dancer and an actor, you know, is in the doing musical opera.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing
what
he went through?
No, I know. It's crazy and all the many hours. It's like, you know, they just don't train over there for a couple hours. Like, you know, people do out here. It's like all day long. you know, like all day, you know, like 14 hours a day.
Yeah, and
that's
were
what they have
back then. Yeah, like what you're saying, the training. They used to get like beatings, like spankings, if they didn't do it. I mean, that would be like a form of abuse nowadays. But that's what they used to do back then. That's why he's good at what he does, because
oh, they still do that. Yeah, I'm sure.
Well,
yeah,
maybe some places, but you know, it's just really funny. It's just like to think back then that was more of the norm, like way back then, the discipline that they had. But today it is, you know, I mean, it's I just can't even picture it because he was really young. He was like 8 years old when they signed him into the Dahmer Academy. You know, that's just the training intense for a kid, never mind an adult, but for a child.
Yeah, yeah. So they, yeah, and it's like, how traumatic is that? That he lived through, just, you know, he actually, you know, separated from his family and grew up in this opera. You know, it's so, you know, it's amazing for anybody to go through that. You know, not be traumatized.
Yeah, and I guess I think that's why he's good at what he does. And probably he's probably also part monkey. Do you know what I'm saying? Because it's like, I swear to God, if you see him, the way he's swinging and stuff like that, I mean, I really do think, you know, they say like there's elements and animals in martial arts form. I really think that Jackie is really part monkey.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, no, I don't know about you, but if you ever see, you know what I'm saying, when he's swinging and stuff like that, he's just like,
he's amazing,
so
very flexible. Yeah, very flexible and very, very amazing and is basically fearless. I mean, it just seems like he's fearless with everything that he's doing, you know, and he seems like he's just been, you know, fearless most of his career. And he's just, you know, I mean, how many people, though, take the time and energy to learn so much, like, about the craft as he has? You know, he knows every aspect of filmmaking, not only just stunts, but directing and every aspect of it, you know. I mean, he really understands every aspect of it. So, and he's really got a respect for other, you know, filmmakers and everybody else as well. So it's kind of interesting. But yeah, have you got to the, what, how far have you gotten along just in the very beginning, huh?
Yeah, it's just in the beginning I started to read, and it was like, man, if a show was long, I'd read the whole book. Because it's like, I just figure in getting into, like, the Drama Academy where, you know, that's how we met his two brothers, Yin Bao and Samuel Hung, and that's how we actually met them. He was actually used to get kind of beat up by them because they were, like, older brothers, so they would call him older brother there, and it just, you know, he just stayed connected with them for the rest of his life. I mean, can you imagine that, out of that, and finding brothers?
No, that is amazing. That's true brothers for you. they will beat you up and then test techniques on you. So that's they're gonna be lifelong friends. There you go. But that's amazing. Every single one of them is very accomplished and to have that camaraderie with them and to be able to utilize their, you know, talent and have that, you know, just you know, the social skills to be able to have a long-term relationship with people, you know, is amazing that he's been able to call upon, you know, his brothers for amazing, you know, things. And yeah, he was around when working with Bruce Lee way back in the time, and you know, he's been around a long, long time.
Yeah, there's, I don't know if you know the story where he, like, I think, I forget what exactly Bruce did to him. I don't know if he hit him with a stick or something like that. And he fell down, and, you know, it's like Bruce went over to him, and he played it out the whole day because he was, like, getting Bruce Lee's attention. He was like, ow, 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 and Bruce kept saying, are you okay? So he was playing it out because he, like, loved that Bruce Lee was paying attention to him, and he was, like, saying some other stories. That's what, there's all these stories I hear about him because it's like, you know how, like, we talk about, you know, I can talk about stunts and stuff like that. We know it's not really safe. Oh, I'm getting my neck broken on set and stuff like that. And people are like, huh? Like, they don't understand. We're, like, kidding around. It's just all acting. And I was like, yeah, Jackie Chan got his neck snapped in a film by Bruce Lee. And there's this famous picture of him. And he's like, he looks like he's really in pain. And Bruce Lee snaps Jackie Chan's neck in the film. And I go to talk about that, and people are like, for real? And I'm like, no, it's a film. They don't understand that. So it's just the lingo that we talk, and people don't get it that it's just film, it's not real. But He also, I think there was another time when he went bowling with Bruce Lee. He actually.
Oh wow! Well,
yeah,
I'd like to see that game. I wonder who won.
I don't know, because he was mostly describing the day. I think that was the last time he saw Bruce Lee, because he was like, Bruce was like, where you going? He's going bowling, and Bruce ended up going with him, and he was like trying to hold people back, like, you know, being a bodyguard for Bruce Lee. And so he was saying about like describing his clothes, and Bruce Lee like had bell bottoms on or something in the boots, and he was like talking about that. And I don't think really if he really bowled or not, but Jackie was just excited that Bruce wanted to hang out with them. I mean, that's the type of guy Bruce was. So it left a very good impression on Jackie, and I guess that stuck with him ever since.
Wow. Wow. Oh, gosh, that's fun.
Yeah.
That's fun. Wow, yeah. So I'm wondering, who actually started directing first? Was it Samuel Hung, or was it?
Yeah, or I think it was actually him, because it was like, Darren, if you read in the book, Jackie, you know, he kept, you know how you say you fall off your path or something like that, and I think he had to, like, a couple times, like, in other words, long story short, he had to, like, kind of swallow his pride and go ask, you know, can I work with you, Samuel? That's what, like, it says in the book and stuff. So he had to, like, I guess Samuel, I considered his older brother, you know. Is that a dog? It sounds like a dog.
Yeah, yeah, I'm sitting here with John, and a dog goes by, so he wants to.
Oh,
of course,
God.
He wants to play with the dog.
No, see, what people don't know about you and John, you know, it's like, I don't know if you can say kind of like your significant other. You guys have this thing on Facebook. I know this is all, like I said, about Jackie, but it's so that people understand. The funny thing is, like, because I'm saying a dog, what they do back and forth on the Facebook, they're always posting things about dogs and how Melissa wants a dog.
That's true.
I see this all day long. This is on Facebook. You guys post pictures of dogs.
Of dogs.
You know, I've got there, and I'm like, you sure it's not John barking? Because John's crazy, right? And I'm like,
yeah,
you sure
exactly.
It's not pretending to be a dog. It says, but it was an actual dog, right?
Yeah, no, it was an actual dog, but yeah, no, he does do that occasionally. He does pretend like he's barking, and he likes to have fun. But I gotta tell you, what we do is so very stressful that that's why we do all the dog stuff. We need a laugh. We need something fun to look at, because it's really stressful what we're doing all the time. So it's like we need a like laugh, you know. So it's a lot of work, you know. There's a lot of work that goes behind, you know, with the training and then you're going out for auditions all the time, and then you're pulling projects together, and then once you get your project done, what we're doing today is promoting, you know, the projects, because we just got that one project done and the Day Trader done, and so the film festival's at the end of the month, so we're promoting it, and so it's always something, you know, we've always got something going on, and it's just crazy. But it's like Jackie too. I mean, he's got, you know, he's writing, he's getting together with his team, he's training, he's, you know, then he gets in and edits, you know, and I mean, it's amazing what he does, you know, and it's just, yeah, it's a lot of work doing what we do. It's not just, you know, 8-hour job. It's not a 9-to-5 job. It's a, you know, 20-hour day sometimes, you know.
Yeah, it's not really, people that aren't doing things like that, even on independent films and stuff, or, you know, bigger budgets, people don't understand that it is hard work, because they just see what goes on in the screen. You know, everything's put together nice, and you see it in the film. But if you never worked on a set, not even as an extra, you'll never know what goes into it, let alone, you know, an action film. But, I mean, even in there's stunts, even in, like, drama films and comedy films, there's stunts all the time. Like,
oh, there is. There is. Every single genre has stunts in it. Yeah, all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why you, yeah. That's why it's really important. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. You know, it's just something that I do appreciate, not just with Jackie, but the stunt community. You know, it's something that, I mean, for me personally, I've been trying, you know, because I always say, you know, I never wanted to be Barbie. I always wanted to be a ninja growing up, because the stunt community, I've always been in awe and been impressed by all the work that they've done. And I was welcome aboard as a board advisor by John G. Hagner, the CEO, the founder of the Hollywood Stuntmen's Hall of Fame, and I had him on my show, and he actually told me Jackie Chan was an inductee for the Hall of Fame. The thing is, everything's in storage. It's like 65 years of, like, preserving all the stuff. So,
wow.
That's another thing, too. You know, it's you know, to see this museum get erected, it's not just for the past, but it's for the present and the future, and Jackie's going to be going in that. It's just, you know, how you get the money and stuff, so I keep also trying to do that on my show, but I understand, you know, you guys have given me so much hope my whole life. You know, people like Jackie and all yous, it's just that something I hope to give back in my own way. I don't know if I...
Yeah, no, that's great that you're...
Yeah, it's something that, you know, I don't know, I don't think anything's been collected. I've been doing the fundraiser for over a year, not even like, there's nothing that's been collected yet. So I just keep, you know, I keep trucking along. You never could tell. Maybe someday someone will be interested and boom, all the money in one, you know, you never can tell.
Yeah, no, that's, yeah, that's how it is. That's how it is for some reason. It just seems to, you know, it's just a numbers game a lot of the time. And also, I think just if you was having, if it was a is it a brick and mortar place? Because we've never, nobody knows about it out here.
What, the Hollywood Stuntmen Halls of Fame?
Yeah. Is it a brick and mortar place or is it not? Is it a concept?
It was,
wait.
It was a museum before, but now I think it's closed now. Everything's in storage in Utah. It's all like all these weapons, memorabilia, all this stuff from 65 years of gathering. And it's like if you go on the website and check it out, it's the Hollywood Stuntman's Hall of Fame. They have all these handprints, more than at the Chinese Man Theater. It's all in storage,
wow.
All this stuff. And, you know, there's something, too, about, you know, other things, like there's other people that I would like to see that's not just, you know, the older one besides Jackie. I mean, there's so many other great people that I know in my head because I guess I'm kind of a younger generation that's on the board of advisors that he welcomed me on board, and there's so many people that I would like to see go in the museum. But the first step is the, you know, having the museum. So everything is put away. There's no museum
now.
So, yeah, that's what it was. They had pictures of it before, but as far as I know, I think everything's in storage now.
Wow. No, yeah, I guess it's just, you know, word of mouth. We just got to, you know, get it out there that this place could exist. But I think that the idea is, you know, I guess he needs a large investor to come in and invest into it because nobody really knows where it is or how to, you know, and, you know what I'm saying? There's, you know, it's kind of difficult because there's no, you know, you don't know, okay, you know how, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, if there's a brick and mortar museum, you can do it. Like there's a martial arts museum that we have out here in Burbank. And so people go in there, they donate money, there's screenings, there's things. So there's something going on every week so that people can kind of just go by there. So they kind of, you know about it. I'm wondering, why doesn't he just team up with Michael Masuda over at the Martial Arts Museum? I mean, they should just team up and just do it together.
Yeah,
I mean, that might be huge.
I don't know. I mean, because I don't know with John right now, I don't know his whole situation. You know that he's an older gentleman. He's like 85 years old now. So I don't know, Michael. I tried to friend request him on Facebook. He might have too many requests right now. So I'm trying to see, you know, it's like I know what you're saying, networking and talking to many people, but trying to get in touch with different people because I think this would be a grand honor to have this, you know, for the community, you know, because even like, you know, newer people, not just from like so many years ago, because there's so many people, you know, even, you know, a couple of films that I'd like to see preserved in there, other things. Too,
yeah.
So.
Yeah. And there's, yeah, I mean, there's also cute with a couple of people. There's the Torsion Wars, which are, you know, it's a great organization which raises money for injured stunt professionals. I mean, they may, you know, have an interest to work with this gentleman, you know. I mean, there's a lot. And then there's a, you know, there's Action Icon Awards that raises money for inner city youth for learning jobs in the film industry. And they may have an interest in doing that, too. So I guess we just need to get, you know, I don't know, get the word out. But, yeah, see, there's great, you know, great causes like that that, I mean, yeah, I mean, that would be really good to, every, you know, if we can get a couple of these places to team up with him, then maybe, you know, it can happen. Yeah,
yeah,
get a brick-and-mortar museum.
Have it up there somewhere. I don't know. It was like I was saying Utah, but maybe California. I don't know. I don't know really any good location because I think it's like, you know, once you have the funds, I think it's a lot easier, you know, to see what you have to get a place. I was like, I just don't know how else to, like, look at it to see how to, you know, raise the money.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm surprised, you know, I know there's like a lot of museums out here in L.A. with the, you know, in Hollywood. So I'm kind of surprised he hasn't hooked up with some of those museums. So. But, yeah, there's a lot of venture capitalists and things like that. That would probably be, you know, if it was a nonprofit situation, if they were martial arts themselves, they may, you know, look kindly upon it. But, you know, I think any, like, martial arts, you know, group or something like that maybe, you know, or, you know, it's kind of hard outside of L.A. I think it might be, you know, a little bit more difficult than if it was in L.A. or New York or Boston or, you know, somewhere like Georgia or something like, you know, that's got a large film industry.
Yeah, or maybe something that's like, maybe it would be like kind of nice if, because I say how much like I want to move out to California because, you know, here in the East Coast and the winters are bad.
Yeah,
you have like real reason. Maybe if I get out there and it's something that I would love to see, you know, maybe it's stuff that I have to see for myself because I talk about it, so I'm bringing awareness in it, and it's just that. I mean, there's so many people I'd like to see go in the museum and observe it, not just Jackie. But I was excited, believe me. When John Hagner told me that Jackie Chan, like, he didn't tell me until he got on, live on the air. And I'm like, oh, my God, hold it together, Shelley, because I was so excited. Because it's like when he told me that it's just Jackie Chan's an inductee to the Stuntman's Hollywood Stuntman's Hall of Fame, and I was like, really? I was like, I was thrilled. It wasn't even for me, it was for Jackie. I felt like I was getting, you know, I was getting the inductee in the Hall of Fame. I was like, oh, man, but, you know, something, maybe it'll be better once I get out to California and maybe just even look around places and maybe connect with people, because I think when you have a connection of meeting people face-to-face, it's a little bit different, because everything with all the technology and there's no connection, so maybe once being connecting and meeting people, maybe that'll be a step further. As of right now, all I'm doing is, I guess, bringing awareness to it. So I guess it's something.
Yeah,
I don't
great.
Know.
No, that's great. That's amazing. That's amazing, yeah. You can definitely, you know, bring awareness to it. I'd really look into some of these other organizations that can team up, but no, that's grim. That's really good. So how is your film doing? How is your film you're working on doing?
The one that I'm part of, where there's a whole bunch of people working on it with the other three ladies, I kind of don't know everything that's going on because they're filming other things too. But it looks like it's coming along good for me. From independent film, as you know, it does take a while because of budgets and getting money for it. So that's how come like people don't understand like a film itself. The film called Falconer. I guess that's something where, you know, independent film is going to take a while, and it's a lot of work. And this is another thing, too, is, like, it just seems like, you know, doing this dedication to Jackson because of him, it's led me to do all these things. You know what I'm saying? It's, like, it's because every time, like, I've had, you know, problems in my life, thinking of Jackie and what he's gone through. And
that's great.
And such joy. I think that's what Jackie's has helped everybody, you know, a lot of people. So this is
he definitely has. He's really, you know, anytime anybody gets stressed or upset or anything like that, you know, if they want to laugh, they turn on, you know, Jackie Chan film. I mean, it's like a lot of people turn to him to get, you know, stress relief or, you know, to kind of make it through a really rough day or something like that and just kind of forget about the day and go on with their life and, you know, seek some inspiration and, you know, laugh. And, you know, people have been cured from cancer, you know, by sitting in a room with a bunch of comedies, you know. So it's just an interesting thing that what laughter will do, and he will bring that with his, you know, with his films and it's not just the comedy, it's the suspense, you know, that he brings to them. So it's always interesting watching his films and, you know, and of course we sit for hours, you know, breaking down the fight scenes and stuff like that. And, know, he's always got, you know, like two objectives going on and things like that. So it's just, you know, it's just amazing all the illusions that he creates when he does his fight scenes. It's not always what you see, you know. And if you're a silly person like myself and you try to copy his moves, and then you find out that actually, no, that was the move you're trying to copy is actually four moves put together that's been edited, and there's actually, you know, people jumping on people's shoulders and things like that, and reverse, and things have been edited together, and, you know, then you realize, okay, you know, it's like, he's got this illusion, this magical illusion that's going on that he's learned and crafted, you know, over all these years that people, I think, just take for granted, but you really have to be a craftsman, you know, in the editing room as well as, you know, as a, you know, performer and, you know, athlete as well, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, he's an amazing person all around. He's an amazing businessman, you know. He's kept his image going for a long time. He's really good at branding. Everybody, you say Jackie Chan, they know exactly his character,
yeah.
What his character is, what he plays. So he's a, you know, if you just study him from a business standpoint, you know, I mean, that would be an interesting thing to really research as well. It's just, you know, how did he get started with his films? How does his films get made? You know, how does he get them distributed? You know, all that kind of stuff. And just, you know, how does he keep his fans interested? What does he do? I mean, that's studying just that, not alone, you know, his martial arts and everything else. But, you know, saying how he's, you know, he's a great businessman as well is amazing.
Yeah, he doesn't sleep, I swear, because he's always doing something. And, I mean, the man, he just turned 60 years old, right? And it's like, people, you know, like, people get older, right? And it's like, he says he can't do what he used to, but still, you could try, like, say, for example, you can say, like, oh, I could do, like, you know, go up a three-story building, but it's like someone would go up, like, one floor, and I'm like, man, I can't even do that. So it's like, you know, it's like he's still doing these things that us, ourselves, where we're like, we're so much younger than him, he could outdo us. He could dance circles around us. So it's it's amazing. He's just like amazing at his age. And I go, that's someone to look up to, because this is what we need to keep showing in society. Because I keep hearing and I keep trying to talk to people, because it's like other people that I know on my Facebook page, and I see how people in their 20s and 30s are saying, well, I feel so old. And I'm like, why are you saying that? It's just, you have so much to, you know, your life is going to be very long. And it says, well, you know who Jackie Chan is? And they're like, yeah. I said, do you know how old he is? I mean, it's like not meaning he's old and decrepit. It's just that he's older and he's still doing the things that some people in their 20s and 30s says, I can't do, and I'm like, why? And it's trying to help break through all this society programming, and I always use Jackie as an example, and it's like, I used to be...
Yeah, he's a great example. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's really to think of him, and I'm like, man, this guy is always up. I was like, is he cloned? I mean, does he teleport? I mean, I know he has a plane that he flies back and forth, but I was like, how does he do so much? I'm like, do they give him a special coffee? I was like, I'd be asking these questions in person. I mean, I just don't know, because it seems like even when he's filming, and I've seen in the past that there's actually when disasters happen, in stopping filming, he would fly to the disasters and look into it himself and help out mm-hmm. things. And it's like, then he'll go back to films, and I'm like, wow. And he'll go to, like, he'll be doing singing. He'll be doing charity work. I'm like, does this guy sleep? You know, I think, like...
Yeah, probably not. Probably not.
Yeah. It's like, man... He outdoes me any day, and that's why I was like, man, how does Jackie, I was like, I can't comprehend how much energy he has. He just, even at my age, I'm not saying I'm old, which I think that's helped me, like, help deprogram my programming, because when I look at him, and, like, people can't understand, everybody's like, oh, you're so obsessed. I said, no, not really, as I used to be, because now, because of looking at what Jackie does, says, well, I want to do a little bit of that. And when I say there was a part in a film, everybody's like, Shelley, you're nuts. I don't know if you remember the film. I think it was Super Cop, and he was working with Michelle Yeoh. And there was a part where he ran from the building, and he swung onto the helicopter. There was a part he was swinging from a helicopter. And I was like, man, I'd like to do something like that, swinging with a helicopter. But, you know, he wasn't hooked up to anything. There'd be like a harness on me. But Jackie was swinging in the air on the helicopter. And then people were like, Shelley, are you nuts? I go, I want to do it. And it's like these other things, too, where I think it was First Strike, and he takes – inanimate objects, and he uses them as weapons. And I saw this, he was working with a ladder. It's one of my favorite fight scenes in his film.
Yeah.
And it's one of those long ladders, and he's, like, beating people with a ladder. And I'm going, I want to do that. I want to do that in the film. And like, Shelly, be careful, because she, and I'm like,
you know what?
She knows what that, it's crazy.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, no, it's great. I mean, there's a lot of ways that you can, you know, a lot of items that you can fight with, and your cell phone now. I mean, all of our cell phones come with cameras on there, and, you know, as long as, I mean, if you're going to be working with other people, you know, I mean, you should always have insurance cover in case someone gets injured, but, I mean, you know, people can get together and, you know, try things out now, because it's like there's no, you know, the cost barrier isn't really there anymore, so there's a lot of ways to, you know, get together and try projects out. But of course, you know, if you do involve other people, you got to kind of take precautions and, you know, get the proper insurance and get the SAG going and things like that. But, you know, that doesn't mean you can't, you know, do everything you're supposed to do and then just try this stuff out. It's not, you know, it doesn't take $100,000, you know, to make an indie film anymore. You know, I mean, that was like the bare minimum that you could ever get a film done, because just, film alone, dealing with film alone was $80,000, you know. So anyway, but yeah, it's like the, you know, just to, you know, go out there and try things out, with your friends and a camera, you know, just your cell phone. I mean, anybody can, you know, some people can do that, or actors can, you know, try to learn and get some things going. So I just think, it's kind of interesting when you go back and watch some of these, you know, you start reading books that you're reading right now, and you realize that they're just people like us, but, you know, they're just making it happen somehow, some way. You know, they don't have very fancy stuff back in China, and they're just making things happen. So it's just like, we just got to get out of our own way and just make some stuff happen, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Beautiful. It really is,
yeah.
I guess from what I've heard, though, I think there's more safety precautions in America than over in Asia, because I guess when Jackie came here, and it's like he could do something so much faster, but all the safety stuff we have to set up here. So I don't know if I'd be afraid to make any films in Asia, because they're just crazy, but in a good way. That's why their films are really good, because they go really nuts, like, you know, who's like – more up-and-coming. I kind of think of him as a younger Jackie Chan, as Tony Jaa. And it's like,
yeah,
he's crazy too. And it's like, but all in a good way. And it's like, how do they do this? I was like, is Jackie really human? Is Tony really human? It's kind of like, how do they bend and do these things with their bodies? I was like, maybe they have no bones. I don't know if that's something in there, because it's like, you know, he goes,
if you're trained from an early, it's a training from an early age. If you're training from an early age, you know, that's the thing. They're trained and they're focused from early age, but it's also having really, really extremely good mentors. And that was the thing with Jackie, and that's the thing with Tony Jaa. It's having those mentors. It's having those fight choreographers that have their back. It's having those people that have their back. And that's, you know, that's in the directors, that, you know, but having the fight choreographers and the, you know, that really have their backs is the key for those guys as well. It's a team. It really is a team effort, you know, a lot of this stuff. And the thing is that they take their time over there, and that's the difference between here and there. And that's probably why their fight scenes are a lot more intricate than ours, is because they take a long time to film a fight scene, where it's like here, you're lucky if you get a rehearsal. Everybody thinks you can show up, choreograph a fight scene and do it, and you'll get all your inserts you need, and you get everything you need. Well, no, in China they take, you know, months to do, you know, months and months to do a scene, a film, and sometimes they take, you know, 2 or 3 weeks, you know, to shoot an intricate fight scene. And, you know, sometimes people will do that. There's some films over here that they'll take the time, and you'll see it. But it's that, you know, they really take the time over there, and that's why some of the stuff, you know, looks amazing, is because they really take the time, and we don't hear, but we do have a lot more safety precautions here, which is really good. And there is safety precautions, you know, that are lacking in China. So if you're, you know, you do go over there, just be careful.
Yeah. I don't know if I'd ever get out there, but I mean, just the thing too is like, and I try to explain to people because there's a lot of action films besides Jackie's that are in overseas where, you know, with subtitles, and if people, I don't know what it is, they just don't want to waste their time with subtitles. And this was a thing I was thinking of, you know, the film The Raid. I guess people didn't want to sit around and watch the film The Raid because the subtitles, people actually left the movie theater. And I'm like, wait, this is, but you're missing all the good parts, all the action. So it's like when you're sitting around watching.
Wait, where was this at? Was this a new one, the number two, or was this
yeah,
the first one?
The second one. It was the second one in Raid, and I was getting feedback from people that, you know, reading, people were leaving the theater because they didn't want to deal with the subtitles. And I was like, why? I was like, they missed out all the good, you know, the good action. And I was like, I still have to watch it. I get it. See so many films, but you know, to say that and say you don't want to watch it for the action, I mean, you can train your brain. If I can do it, of all people, if I can train my brain to watch subtitles and see a film, I'm pretty sure anybody can do that. I just don't, you know, I don't know, maybe it's the culture in America where we just want everything so done fast and
I think it's a regional thing. Yeah, you got to understand it's really a regional thing too. I mean, you have diehard martial arts fans, and they're used to reading subtitles. Everybody's used to reading subtitles. If you got diehard martial arts fans, they're going to be used to reading subtitles. But if you got the general public, then you know, then they're not. And if you got the general public in Midwest America, definitely not. You know, so it's really got to pick their market for that film. So I'm kind of surprised that, you know, they would put it in a market where people would walk out, because obviously you're putting it in, you know, central, you know, I don't know, Midwest or something where people aren't used to seeing martial art films, period, you know. So, and they're not used to seeing foreign films, period. So, I mean, we're very, you know, we're like an island here, you know, nothing else happens outside these, you know, outside the United States. I mean, you know, I mean, maybe we're hearing stuff that's going on in Iraq or, you know, somewhere else, but, you know, people really don't seem to, there's not much culture that's going on here, so for anybody to even see a foreign film is, you know, I mean, how many large theatrical releases of foreign films do we have? I don't know. I really haven't seen any. So,
yeah,
I mean,
a lot of,
can you even, I can't name one, actually. Can you name one, that theatrical release, foreign film? Besides The Raid? Yeah, ever.
The thing is, I think that, you know, I mean, I'm trying to think what, I mean, they had a couple showings of it, but I don't know, because it was a Jackie Chan film itself. It was called Chinese Zodiac. I don't know if it was released in a couple of theaters. It looks like there's a couple people calling in.
Good. Go, Shelley. Go take it. Yeah. Go take those calls, and I'll see you later. I'll keep listening.
I'll write to you later. Thank you so much for calling in, and I'll write to you later after the show. Thank you. Thank you, Melissa. It was great having you on the show.
All right. Thanks, sir. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Yes, I'm calling from California. Do you recognize my voice?
Debbie, I'm going to bring you on, like a couple people calling in, so I'm going to bring you and then someone else too, so I don't know who this is,
uh-huh.
But I'm going to bring it in, so give me one moment. This is great, everybody's trying to call in now. See, I guess patience does pay off, so give me one moment here. Okay. Hello, second caller, are you on the air?
Hey, Shelley, it's Crosby calling.
Oh, Crosby, and I got Debbie here. How are you guys doing? I mean, thanks for calling in, guys. This is great.
Still sunny out here.
So you're in California, Debbie, and Crosby, you calling from Boston, right?
Of course. You know, it's nice that we got a little West Coast, East Coast action here. Not in the Midwest right now, but yes, I am, yeah, here in Boston.
Well, you guys just have to tell me that I sound funny to you, that's all.
No. You sound kind of normal.
As normal as Shelly's going to be.
Yeah. I know, Crosby, you're really got a busy schedule. So, Debbie, did you want to hold on for one moment? Don't go anywhere. Stay
sure.
In the queue, okay?
Okay.
Crosby. Thank you, Debbie. Crosby. So what's up with you?
Oh no, it's a lot going on. A matter of fact, you know, shout out to Debbie. Is as well. I'm actually not going to take up a lot of time because I got sneak in and sneak out here. But, no, a lot has been going on recently. I just finished up, we're pretty much wrapping up post-production on a new movie from Christopher Nolan called 72 Hours, starring Tim and Kyle Durrett, Erica Hubbard, Harry Lennox. And a cavalcade of artists and talent, which I'm going to name off right now, which includes Brian Hooks, Cinda Williams, Tanji Miller, and Terry J. Vaughn, as well as Chyna Lane, Braylee Evans, Christopher Nolan, and Thea Kamara. All Chicago talent, which I'm very proud to... Which I find very strange because, okay, a Boston guy who's actually a co-producer on a Chicago film production, which that's like, whoa, I'm sorry, what?
Wow, you're a busy bee. You know, you've come a long way, and you know, I'm glad you're calling in. Are you calling in about Jackie?
Actually, yes. I'm actually calling. Actually, I'll be honest. You hit me up earlier today asking if I could just call in and, you know, say it doesn't matter what if you want to talk about Jackie, if you want to talk about James, if you want to talk about this or you want to talk about that, I'm going to call in regardless because, hey, you invited me to call in and that's exactly what I'm doing.
That's
the brother-sister love continuum that we both have. So, you know, I'm going to represent and I'm going to show love no matter what.
Thank you so much. And, you know, I was like, it was still an honor to work with you the couple times I did back home in Boston. And I always say, Tricepta Studio, like, no matter where I go. And, you know, that if I get out to California, move out there, you got to come out and see me.
Oh, snaps. Hey, if you're in Cali, I'm always going to be there. Matter of fact, I was hoping to make a trip to Cali out later this year, but, you know, things happen. Speaking of which, are you even in Cali now, or?
No, I'm still in Maine. We're still filming here with Z. We're still doing, I got to finish up with the film Falk here, you know, before I do anything. And so, you know, like, just giving props to Jackie, because I wouldn't be doing all that I'm doing if I didn't have Jackie as an influence in my life. So I feel very blessed, and I think, you know, everything's the beginning, and I'll get out there to California. So I do know that I'll be blessed with many things once I get out there. But finishing here first, and like I said, you're one of the people, hopefully that you'll be able to come out and visit me in California.
Oh, no, most definitely. I always, when you make it out there, you already know, like, you know what I'm saying, for your housewarming party, I'm going to, you know, I'm actually going to have the first ticket out on Virgin Atlantic to visit you and to basically, you know, have a housewarming party with you.
Oh, thank
for
you.
That
would be so sweet. Thank you. Thank you so much, Crosby. I miss you guys all back in Boston.
Oh, definitely. Boston misses you as well, for the most part. But but for those who don't really know, like, you know, for those who are on here, you pretty much are the Jackie Chan fan club, for the most part. You are the Jackie Chan fan club. You are the Jackie Chan's number one fan, and we have gone on and discussed privately for years about your admiration, how you want to just meet him and have a conversation with him and just how he has inspired you. And personally speaking, I support anyone who has a dream, who is inspired by the dream. It's not for self anything, but it is for, you know, the betterment of not just yourself, but for other people as well. And your convictions and everything that you say or do is strong enough to know that I support anything that you do or say, because you are very kind, sweet, and you just care, and you have dreams. That's the most important thing. You have dreams that you wanna pursue, that you wanna follow, and that it burns inside of you.
Oh, I'm gonna cry. You got me.
And it's because of those dreams, it's because of those feelings of, like, you know, what you want to do with your life that has gotten you to this point. And for that, you know, I fully support anything that you do or say.
Oh, that's so sweet. I don't know what to say. I'm
Wadsworth. Thank you, Crosby. I'm going to cry.
Oh, yeah, no problem. That's really what you do. I mean, that's who you are. You know, that's really what I think everyone in society is. You know, when you have a dream, you grab onto it, and you grab it, and you try to go for that brass ring.
Oh, yeah, I totally get that.
There's no doubt about
it. Thank you so much. And well, you gotta I gotta get back in touch with you so you can be on my show again. You know, because every time you're on your show, I get a lot of listeners. You know, on my show. So I'm gonna get back in touch with you. I know you're busy, and I just want to say thank you for calling in. I appreciate it so much.
Oh, definitely. I like I said, Shelley, this is all about you tonight. It's not about me. It's not about anything. You know, this is all about you because, honestly, if it ain't for you, where do we have an outlet to talk things like Jackie Chan and poop and everything like that? Where do we have that outlet? Come on.
Oh, gosh. Here we go with the poop again. Now people are going to listen to the show. And you mentioned the word crap and people are going to tune in now. There you go.
You better look up. All I got to say is look up past episodes of the Shelley Nunchuck Show, I'd say back starting in 2012, I think. Wow, we've been going on for 2 years in and out. Yeah, go back to everyone who's listening right now. You know, say if you're on Blog Talk Radio, if you're listening to the Shelley Nunchuck's radio show, go back to, like, I don't know, September 22nd or something like that, 2012. Look for Crosby Tatum and Jay Holland and the Surprise casting crew, and you'll hear the conversation about our little mini telethon and how that worked out. You guys just listen in. And then trust me, you'll be entertained, and you will definitely get behind Shelley Nunchuck for everything that she's done and also for us, which I completely support. So we just want to say thank you guys very much, Shelley, for all the support you have. But please, check those episodes out because that's where the poop thing started from.
Okay. I forgot about that. Thanks for reminding me. Now people can be like, oh, poop. Great. Well, thank you for calling in.
No problem.
Well,
back to your regular scheduled program.
Well, thank you. You enjoy the rest of your night, and I'll get back with you so I can have you on my show as a guest again, okay?
No problem, Shelley. Take care.
All right. You have a good night, Crosby.
You too.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, Debbie?
Yeah.
Hi, you there?
Was that Crosby that plays the Penguins?
he's so adorable. He's one of my film brothers, and I've had him. It's just amazing that I've got to work with him when I was back in Boston. I was on a few film sets, and it was just very, very sweet. He's a very sweet guy, and he's very hardworking, and he has some films that, you know, were actually released, surprise, surprise, and he's just doing big, wonderful things. And it's just that, you know, people, even though I haven't seen him for a while, and it's just they just know how much I like Jackie, and I used to constantly talk about Jackie Chan, but everybody's like, you know, Shelley, come into your own. You know, it's okay to like Jackie, but they want to know about me, and I think that, you know, Jackie's always going to be part of me. It's just something that he is, and it's like, it's not to make guys jealous or anything. Like, people don't understand. When you have someone that's an inspirational role model, that's going to help you in your own life. And
well,
I haven't talked about him that much, but I don't know if you can understand that.
Well, no, let me tell you my Jackie Chan story, okay?
Oh, right.
Oh, yeah, okay. Many when I first started in martial arts, okay, it's been almost 30 years. So I was watching the old Jackie Chan movies he made back in the old country before he ever got popular over here. Okay,
uh-huh.
So one night I invited this girl from my martial arts class over to watch the Jackie Chan movie, and she was like, oh, this is so stupid. Oh, my God. He'll never amount to anything. He'll never be anything. Boy, I'll tell you what. I rub it in every chance I get. Really? Never heard of Jackie Chan, huh? So I was a fan long before he got popular over here. Plus, I got to tell you something. You remember when I was down at James Liu's house when I interviewed James Liu and Don the Dragon Wilson?
Yeah.
We talk about Jackie Chan and James Liu's interview because they're friends. They work together. But I got to tell you, I don't know if you remember what he said Jackie is afraid of. Jackie's afraid of needles. Jackie does not like needles, you know, as an acupuncture.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah, I think it was given blood or something, and he wasn't really too happy about that. That's right.
Yeah. It was funny because I had asked James Liu. I could have sworn I saw a picture of him somewhere doing acupuncture. He goes, that wasn't me. He goes, I don't like needles. And I said, I don't either. And then pretty soon it led to, you know, Jackie Chan. So I hit him needles. He goes, show him a needle, he'd run away.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. I think there was something he was talking about giving blood on his page before, and I think he did mention that, and it's really funny to think that, and I'm like, you know, you just don't think of it, but everybody's got something, you know what I mean? It's
oh, yeah.
Really funny. I forgot about that. It's just reminding
me. I hate needles. When I was 7 years old and had to go in for a blood draw, 7 years old, okay? It took a nurse, my mother, and somebody else to hold me down. I mean, I jumped. I was out of that seat flying, and they had to hold me down. So ever since then, I just, you know how they'll show a close-up in a movie of the needle? I mean, they know. There's probably so many of us that just hate needles, but that just freaks us out. So, and then I heard you and Cross talking about poop. Now, are colonics popular back on the East Coast like they are out here? I mean, out here in California, that's like they've got as many colonic places as they do Starbucks. You know what I'm saying?
I know it's a really, it's kind of a good thing, but the thing I'm laughing is because if you have that much Starbucks, you can really, I guess, get
yeah, you don't need a
from
colonic.
The inside.
You don't need a colonic.
You just don't even understand when Crosby, you know, I get a bunch of guys, you know, I get along pretty well with guys, you know, friendships and stuff like that, and it's like I have this really strange sense of humor. I don't even know how we mentioned the word poop, and I swear to God, my chat room, so many, like, people signed on. It was like, what the heck, and then it's like, I was like, what? It was like one of the weirdest things that ever happened on my show. People were just like, listen to it. And there I got guys from the studio in there, you know, calling in from Boston. I don't know how we got on the subject of poop, but it just is a topic where people get excited to hear about it. I'm like, you know, you poop your pants or you get the runs or whatever, the diarrhea drip song, you know, stuff like that. People are enthralled. They go, now, well, I guess if, makes people happy. Maybe talk about it more often. I don't know, but word poop. I'm like, you know, just to think. Imagine though, half the stuff Jackie. I mean, going through. I can probably imagine, you know, because if he's worked with animals, he probably had a one-time deal with poop, like sooner or later. Because you know, you like to think about because he worked with a lot of animals. He rode like a cow or something, and. You know, all these different types of things. Like maybe he stepped in poop himself or something. What questions to talk about and stuff it's like, but, you know, when you work with animals.
I've got the greatest poop story ever about when it comes to animals. Many, many years ago, I was an adult, but my mother had never been to the circus because growing up, they didn't have the money. She grew up during the Depression era. And, you know, so she'd never been to the circus. Mom, I'm going to take you to the circus. So I took her to the circus, and there's a guy whose job is to carry one of those big Rubbermaid tubs around, and if the elephant starts to take a dump, he has to run behind him with that thing. And I was laughing so hard. I was doubled over crying, and there was a little kid sitting in the seat next to me, and he was looking at me like I'd lost my mind. I couldn't believe that there's a job in the circus of catching pachyderm poop.
Oh, my God. You get pooped on. This must be an explosive. Oh, my God. Now you have a job?
It's like basketballs.
Oh, my God.
And they float.
Surprise.
rather large zoo. People think Fresno's this little cow town, but we have this beautiful thing. It's called Chaffee Zoo. And about 20 years ago, they rebuilt the elephant pen because the poor elephant just had this little pen. It could barely just turn around and go back into its shed. But anyway, so they rebuilt the elephant pen, and, I mean, they had a big swimming pool and trees and all this stuff. So they got these elephants in there. So there's, like, a female elephant down in the swimming pool, and the male starts down after her. And my friend made this remark. She says, oh, look. She says, they're in the jacuzzi. Well, all of a sudden, the elephant starts moving. And that stuff, like, floats to the top of the basketball. And then the male elephant mounted the female elephant, and I was crying. And so then there was a bunch of these, you know, mothers and their small children around, and this one mother didn't want, you know, her kid asking what was going on. So she's like, look, the one elephant's giving the other elephant a bath. And I'm like, oh, I was laughing so hard. And again, these little kids looked up at me like I was insane. So, yeah, that's incredible.
Oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. I'm telling you, if people score gets on, this is going to be a very highly, like, I know in the archives, people are going to go back and listen to this because we mentioned the word poop. Hey, they mentioned poop. Let's go listen to the show because I'm not kidding. When you have crap TV or something, like a bunch of reality shows or something that are so bad, I call it like crap cast TV. People watch it, so maybe they'll look up, hey, poop on Shelly Milchuk's show. This is great crap cast. I'm trying to talk about Jackie Chan. We're talking about elephant poop. The way my shows turn sometimes, I don't know. I don't know where they go. It's just like maybe because East Coast, it's so late, and it's just like you're just hanging on, getting ready to pop off into bed because you guys out in California, you're 3 hours behind, right?
Right.
Something like that, three or...
Yeah, the sun's still shining out here right now.
Oh, nice.
The sunshine right now, yeah.
It's so jealous that it's, like, so warm out there. It's just like, no more snow. I don't ever want to deal with snow ever again. I'm just, like, I'm dreading it. Oh, God, help me.
Yeah, there's certain parts of California that get snow. I live between, you know, Sierra Nevadas. And then the Grapevine, which is, you have to go over the Grapevine to get into L.A. If it snows on the Grapevine, you do not want to be there. California's got some weird spots, the Grapevine being one of them. In fact, one time I was down in L.A. at a hotel, and I was in the lobby, and a bunch of us standing around talking, and finally these European tourists, they said, what is this Grapevine that you speak of? And I looked at them, and I said, 60 miles of bad road, because that's basically what it is. Yeah. So that's part of the thrill of going to and from L.A.
Wow. I'd have to see for myself. Like, because when you say you live in Fresno, is that where?
Yeah, I'm between San Francisco and L.A. We're actually a little bit closer to San Francisco. If you were to cut the state of California in half, Fresno would be in the northern part. But we're basically centrally located. We have, like, the fifth largest school district. We have a population of over 500,000 people. Fresno's always had a reputation. It has the nickname Baby L.A., which we tend to live up to. You know, anything that happens in L.A., you know, eventually. Uh-oh. Oh, there's a big husky that just came in my room. What are you doing in that house? A bad boy. Of all things to have in Fresno, California, a Siberian husky because they're hairy and it's hot here. Sebastian, come here. Sebastian, what are you doing?
What? I'm like, where are you? Are you at your house or outside? Because I'm like, wait a minute.
I'm in my bedroom, and the husky got in. You go outside. You're a bad dog.
You got to take a picture and put it on my wall because I want to see it. Can you put a picture later on my wall? I want to see the
yeah.
I want to see the doggy. Yeah, cool. Yeah. It's like it's funny. Oh my god! Random moments. It's like candid camera on radio on Shelley Nunchuk's show. I just can't see it.
Oh, he is just he's a spoiled rotten monster. He really is. You know, he weighs 95 pounds. He's a rescue dog. But he's black. He's black, and he's got two little yellow dots above his eyes, and he's got blue eyes.
Aw, beautiful baby.
Yeah, I think that he is a wolf hybrid because he's just a little bit rougher looking than a husky, and then every once in a while he'll take on like a wolf stance, and then he also howls, and they say the ones that howl are usually wolf hybrids. So,
yeah.
But he's very sweet. He's very sweet. Wait, I hear his little breath coming again. I never tease a 95-pound husky with a dog treat. You will not win.
Aww. I definitely want to see him now. Make sure you post a picture. I'll probably pass out after the radio show. It's like I still got a couple things to watch, and I apologize. I've been trying to you and Douglas Wong. There's two things I have to watch. I'm trying to get caught up with things. So I was like, I've been trying to watch your interview of Dawn the Dragon Wilson, and then also Douglas Wong posted something on my wall, so I'm trying to keep up with everything. So I still have to see your interview, and I'm like, you know, I promise.
That interview
I promise
is
I'm gonna
hysterical.
Sit.
You have to see that interview. It's absolutely hysterical. Dawn talks about everything. I think I mentioned this on your show before. Everything from his hair to his butt.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. Talked about his butt.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah. Well, what it was is I guess, the director, at one point in his film career many years ago, I guess they asked him how he felt about, what was it, rear nudity or anyway, he was like, huh, what? And the director says, well, you know, we want to show your butt. We want you getting out of like a jacuzzi and we want to see your butt. And he's just like, no. He says, people pay to see me kick butt, not to see my butt. Although, I don't know, in the shape that man's in, I don't think I would mind paying to see it on the movie screen. You know.
Well, I mean, I don't know, it's like, you know how you see somebody a certain way? It's like, I was like, you know, like with Jackie, right? There was a couple of things where his butt got shown that it was like he was in the water. And I was like, no, Jackie, put your pants back on. Like, there's things that he was running around with Chris Tucker with two, I think it was Rush Hour, and they stripped him down. All they had was socks, and they were running around. They had like, newspapers or something around. I was like, Jackie, no, I don't want to see butt. It was like, it's just something with Jackie. I've seen Jackie without a shirt, not me personally, but, you know, on there. But it's like something where, you're not saying he's not in shape, and it's not like Jackie's not good looking or anything. It's kind of like certain things, I think, with certain people, I don't want to see because I look at them a certain way. You know what I'm
right.
saying? It's like,
you know,
I think, like, with Dawn and Jackie, both of them, I think I'd prefer, you know, them doing their things where they don't have to show off their butt. You know,
right. Well, here's the thing. You know, Don was not raised in Hollywood. You know, he was raised relatively normally, you know, on the East Coast, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, didn't get involved in the whole Hollywood thing until he was an adult. And, you know, Hollywood's not, at least in my experience, Hollywood's not as sleazy as some people try to make it out to be, you know. There are people down there that try to do the whole casting couch thing and all that, but for the most part, it's legit. You know, usually the stuff that is not legit are people that aren't really in the entertainment business but want to be and project themselves out there saying, yeah, you know, I'm a film producer, or I'm a photographer, I'm a this, I'm a that, and they're not really. And they con people into doing things. Like, I knew this woman that got all excited because she wanted to be a model, and she had this photo shoot in L.A. God knows how she found out about it, Craigslist, I don't know. But anyway, she, you know, was bragging on her Facebook that she had this photo shoot in L.A.
Hmm.
So she goes down there, and she gets herself a hotel room, and the next day she goes to the address where, you know, this photo shoot is supposed to take place. It's like a rundown old apartment.
apartment complex.
Oh, my God.
So she calls the guy, and she's like, I'm here. And he goes, okay, I'll be right down. So about a half hour later, after a fight with his girlfriend, he goes down, gets in her car, and says, let's go back to your hotel. And she's like, what? You know, and then the guy's like, once they get back to her hotel, he's like, well, can you put on your bikini? I'll take pictures of you by the pool. I mean, come on, you know, that's,
strange.
That guy's got nothing. Yeah, he's got nothing going.
I think the type of people, like, I feel very lucky because the people like yourself and many people I'm getting to know, I think it's something to do maybe with martial arts and the stunt community in the filming business. Maybe it's a different type of setting, you know, because Jackie is about respect and about honor, and it's like Don Wilson, like everybody that's in connection, like I it's just something universal where it seems like in that type of filming, maybe not all, but I mean, it seems like most of the people that I've been connecting with and like looking at Jackie and a bunch of them, it's kind of a respect and more of an honor, like their work is more honorable. I don't know if you can understand what I'm saying, but
I do.
That's the way
I
look at it. You know, it seems like they want you to do well on your own, and it's good that we look up to them, but I guess you have to find your own way. You know what I'm saying? They want you to work hard, but it's not,
well,
you know, I think it's more with honor. I think there's a big difference and with the people that we associate than a lot of people.
I've had my share of people who have attempted to ride my coattails. I mean, I've been working hard for 10 years to try to get in to Hollywood. You know, I mean, I go down, I network, you know, and there's really, really some wonderful, nice people down there. But the thing of it is, you can't just figure, oh, I know so-and-so, I can get into show business because
it doesn't work that way.
Yeah, it doesn't work that way. Like, you're familiar with the little incident that's happened in my life in the past few weeks, and I really think that was that person's intent, was to ride my coattails into Hollywood. She figured she's going to meet a big celebrity and, you know, either get into modeling or get into acting or, you know, marry him for their money or whatever, and you know, she got really upset when she found out it just wasn't going to go that way. No, you have to really work hard to get in this business. I mean, I've done commercials out here. I've done some, you know, I call them little films. The film industry is picking up very rapidly here in Fresno, very much so. We have more access right now.
Mm-hmm.
We've got some good locations for shooting around here. But, we have a Fresno Filmmakers Alliance that meets once a month. It's just sort of a social mixer. And I've literally had people I've never even met before come up to me and go, you're the one that goes to the Emmys, aren't you? And I said, yes. And they're like, well, I want to go to the Emmys with you. It's like, I don't even know you. So,
oh, man. I don't get that. It's kind of like, I mean, that's not something you would ask someone. It's kind of like, I would understand, hey, you want to go see a film with me with so-and-so, like a film or something. That's kind of like, you know, maybe some people want to take their date or their mother or father or something. That's a whole different thing. But maybe, like I said, maybe it has to do with the, you know, martial arts and the respect of, you know, like training in a dojo where it has that respect. I'm not saying everybody that's not into martial arts is that way, but it just seems like I hear more good things. Like all the people that I know, like Don Wilson and all of them, you know, like Jackie, all these good things that they do, they also give back. That's another thing they instill upon all these good things upon younger generations. So it's something they can pass on, and it's like values. I think that's the thing with some martial arts films, it really pushes values, you know, and it's something that I think is a positive thing. Maybe it sounds crazy, but I mean, that's the way I look at it. And I can't believe I only have like 10 minutes left.
Oh my gosh.
I cannot believe this is what happens. It's like, there I am. Da, 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 da. So I only have 10 minutes left in the show because it's almost 11 here.
I'm going to let you close it up. I've got to go find that husky. He's hiding in my house somewhere.
Oh, make sure. make sure that, you know, you take a picture and post it on Facebook.
I will. I'll do that. Okay, Shelley, you take care. I'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, Debbie, you have a good night.
All right. Bye-bye.
No, okay, bye-bye. I can't believe I have, like, 10 minutes left here. I'm, like, I'm choking on my own spit. I got to get a drink right here. Very nice that people, you know, called in. I was saying, hey, want to call and talk about Jackie? And it seems like turning, talking about poop. I don't know why. When it was like with Crosby, anytime he calls in, it seems like the magical word of the word poop. Guys get very excited. And I'm like, yeah, I guess I can kind of get it. But so what I'm going to do is Debbie told her story about the elephant and the floating poop. Imagine all. Here I am trying to talk about Jackie Chan, and then we end up talking about poop. Crazy, crazy, crazy stuff. Now, imagine if I was drinking doing this show. I can imagine all the chaos, yeah. But I was, like, hoping I'm sitting here choking. Maybe I got a furball. I do have two cats. I don't know. Maybe I'm going to huck up a furball. But I don't know if there's still, if Jackie's book is still in production. Like I says, I have two of them, the smaller one, the bigger one. And the hard copy, it's just like, I found this actually in a Thucka book. And I actually got this for like a dollar. And it's actually, I staple it, try to keep it together. It's to me, I just don't want to throw it away. I don't know why I don't want to part with this book. I mean, real, it's falling apart. And I've stapled the inside. It's like the seams coming out just to have it. So that's why I don't really try to open it up too much, because it's just, I don't know. Nowadays with books, they're doing away with bookstores and everything's on, I guess, Kindle. I don't have a Kindle, but nothing feels better than a book in your hand. I don't know if that sounds old-fashioned or not. And it's like this book is really cool because on the back of Jackie Chan's book is, on the cover, it's all, he's doing all these faces, and he's being all funny, and he's got, like, a mouse on top of his head. He's doing all these silly faces on the book, and then there's some pictures, too. When you open up inside of the book, you know, it shows, like, family, and it's just when Jackie was a baby, and when he had the, there's a picture of his mother and his father, and he's got a cowboy suit on. Very, very cute, Jackie. Very, very cute. Some of his poses, and it says, there's like, it's just really funny ones where he's like, young Jackie dons a dress, but you know, he did theater and they did dress up, and it just shows all these wonderful, wonderful pictures. It's just beautiful, beautiful pictures in here. When he was at the Man's Chinese Theater putting his prints in, and just all this. He worked with Stallone. I think he worked with Stallone. No, I guess it was, what was that for, Planet Hollywood? Sorry about that. No, I should have known better. I forgot about what that was for. Maybe he did. What was it? Burn, Hollywood Burn. I never seen that because it was Looking Tough with Sly Stallone and Whoopi Goldberg. My co-stars for a cameo scene in Burn, Hollywood Burn. I actually did not see that. But nice pictures. There's a picture of him hanging from the Hollywood sign. And it's just, I mean, it's really good. I mean, when I was reading this book, and I like, you know, I don't know if anybody else has favorite books, but, you know, if you read something over and over again, and it's like some things and talks about, and it's kind of sad, and I cried about in the book. It's, you know, stuff that Jackie went through in his life. And it's really a wonderful, you know, written really well. About Jackie. So it's not just him being the stunt guy, it's about his life and some of his loves in his life. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful book. And it's just, I'm trying to see how many pages in it. There's about 356 pages. It talks about at the end all his films. But this was I think a book that was written in the 90s. So I guess at the time, you know, it didn't, from that time, it's not saying all his films, because after 100 films, I've lost count. Yeah, it was, I think it was 2011, the film 1911, which some of his films, people don't even realize he's a real good dramatic actor. And when he cries, forget it, I lose it.
do not show a sad film of Jackie Chan in front of me, because I will be the biggest baby. I will be the absolute biggest baby in the world. So here I am, and it looks like my show's ending now, and I'm going to end once again with Sung Bang Choi's Nella Fantasia. And everybody, thank you so much for tuning in. Everybody, thanks for calling, and you all have a good night, and look forward to having many more shows. Thank you for my supporters, my listeners, and my guests, and thank you very much, and have a good evening.
Fantasia, io vedo un mondo giusto, lì tutti vivono in pace e in onestà. Io sogno l'anime che sono sempre fantasia.